Mummy, there's an airplane up in the sky.
I want to talk about the number 218. Ooh. 218 is the number of people that stopped by this past week that listened to our last podcast. And we did a couple of podcasts that had the same running theme, where we just took certain subject matter and then looked to the Urantia book and see what the Urantia book had to say. It's not a very original tactic. If anybody is familiar with The Prophet by Khalil Gibran, it's a great book. I always give it to people when they get married. And it's a short book. It's maybe 80 pages. And it's basically broken down in different subjects. So you have what the prophet speaks about love, or what the prophet speaks about being a parent, or what the prophet speaks about jealousy or anger or God. And it's, you know, sometimes when you look at what a particular book says or a person says about certain subject matter, you can come to a conclusion as to how much insight you can get from that person or that book. And so that's why we did it. But I thought it was a unique attempt, something that I hadn't really done too often before. But nevertheless, 218 people came by. And they stopped in long enough to listen to a little bit of what I had to say. And I thought about that for a little while. And I said to myself, if 218 people came by my house and they wanted to ask me what I thought about the Urantia book, what would I say? Now, obviously, they wouldn't show up at the same time. But, you know, it's the same thing. People stopping in. They don't really know me. Maybe they don't know me very well, but yet they're curious. What is this person saying about the Urantia book? Urantia book is a very interesting book, isn't it? Billions of people haven't discovered it yet. But they will, over time. It will become more prominent. It will become more debated. It can't be ignored. Because it's just got too much information in it that would be, it's almost strange that it is being ignored now. But perhaps because it's so unorthodox in many ways, which leads me to a comment I want to make about my latest post on my blog at urantiaradio.net. And then I'll get back to the 218 people. But in my last, it got me to thinking about this idea that we feel compelled to share the Urantia book with people. We want to share with them what we've discovered. We want to share the good news. In fact, even Jesus tells us when you find God, you want to share that with other people. You want to let them know. But what is the motive behind doing it? Is it to reaffirm our own position? To reestablish that, yes, we're right about believing in this book? There's a little bit of that. I think we all want to share the good news, but we also want to be acknowledged, I suppose, for finding something this spectacular. There's also a need, I think, some of us, we want to save people. In my own life, I thought to myself, you know, this person doesn't realize it, but they could very well not exist at the end point of their life. I know people that are just so evil. There's no possible way they could ever, in my mind, ever turn around and accept that there's something more than just physical life. And we see people on TV and we can tell by the way they behave, or we read about them in the news. And you know who it is. You can see that There was a story of a man in Las Cruces, New Mexico. As a 30-year-old illegal immigrant or migrant from Mexico. And he had been in jail numerous times for various assaults. I think his wife even had a protection order against him at one point. But he was serving a little bit of time, and then he got out of jail, and then he got arrested for, again, threatening to attack someone. But the judge, instead of keeping him in jail, let him go. It turns out this guy got out of jail, and he went and he decapitated this other man and drug him into a city park and left his body with the head 120 feet away for all to see in the middle of the day. This happened last weekend in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Can you imagine? So you take a step back, and what was the motive? Well, this man believed that his wife was having an affair with this other man that was murdered. Maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. But you wonder, you ask yourself, is this man going to go to heaven? Does this man have the capability in his mind to accept the consequences for his actions? Is that required in order for him to? It's the old question, right? Does God let in people who are mass murderers? Does Hitler get a second chance? You know, do all the evil people of all time? I hope not. I hate to say this, but to me, you know, it's fail. You do not pass. You don't get to go. But then we're reminded in paper 133, and I want to get to that too because it's so spectacular. Paper 133 is a segment in Jesus' life, and he covers so much ground in that one paper. I mean, you can get so much from just one single paper about, and I'm specifically talking about Jesus says that justice can only be administered by a group. Mercy can only be administered by the individual. So we give mercy to individuals. We don't judge them. That's the teachings of Jesus. So it is not for us to judge, right? It's not for me to judge this man in Las Cruces. And yet, you can't help but to form an opinion. I suppose ultimately it's not up to me, so perhaps it's not something I even have to waste my time on, but still. So where was I? So back to the 218 and the 218 people that came by last week and visited this podcast. If they came to me and said, you know, Jim, what is it that you want us to know? Why is it so important for you to share this book with us? Are you trying to save us from something? Are you trying to enlighten us because we're doing something wrong? What is it that you think it's so important for us to know about this book that you talk about, that you've dedicated over 150 podcasts to? You know, knock, knock. What do you want us to know? And so this is what I would say. And I thought about this last night. To each of those people, to you, those who take time out of your day, I would say that you have in your hands or you have within your grasps something that has never been delivered to any human being before on this planet. Yes, we have had Christ. Yes, we have his teachings. Yes, we have the Bible. Yes, we have Scripture. Yes, we have the Old Testament. We have all of these wonderful books that have been written over the years detailing the search for God by man. And in every one of these books, there is a commonality of truth, which expresses itself in the following way. Life is an intentional creation, and the mind behind this creation is our eternal first source and center, Father, the Father in heaven, the Lord God of Israel, Allah, the highest concept that you could have of a creator is God, and so much more. That we know from all of the different revelations. What makes this revelation unique for the time that it's in, because we're approaching an age where we're going to have to grow up and recognize that this universe in which we exist is not haphazard. Indeed, we've already learned that our world is not indestructible. We can affect negative change on the world that can cause great destruction. And so having the insight to know that our creation was planned and that the universe is populated by intelligent beings of various orders, to me, completes the picture of why we are here. Having an authoritative document that specifically explains the entirety of the cosmos, as much as we're capable of understanding it, to me warrants sharing this information to you. Because you're not going to hear about it on 60 Minutes or NBC News or any of your cable shows. You're not going to hear about this on the History Channel or Arts and Entertainment. You may not even read about it in any of your local papers. And you ask yourself, well, you're not seeing anything about the Urantia book in the world, and yet it is growing in the world. You know, in all of our conversations that we've had and all of the stuff that we talk about in terms of numbers, just last week we gave you the 2020 totals on how many people are embracing this book, and it looks to be in the hundreds of thousands of in any given year. Thanks to technology and the ease by which it is to get the book. And then all of the people that are behind the translations and making sure that the book is available not only in digital form, but in every language available. I just read this story. I think it's on, if you go to the foundation page or maybe the fellowship website. And there's some incredible stories about people that have dedicated their life. For example, there's a story of a gentleman. It's in the first story. And I'm happy that the fellowship is doing this, because it's either the fellowship or the association. They're letting people tell stories of how the Urantia book not only has affected their life, but also how it's affected the lives of people in their communities and where they are. And there's one story of a man who's been working for 20 years. He was involved in the first translation of the Urantia book into Spanish, El Libre. And then he was also involved and has been involved in the second revision of the translation of the Spanish version of the Urantia book. And he was explaining how he would explain to his son all these years why he has put so much effort into this book and what this book means. And it's the same premise of me wanting to share the book with you. Why am I spending so much time? And again, it goes back to getting the complete picture. There's a complete picture of reality that I must share with you. It's real. We are part of a growing, vibrant, living universe. And it all has to do with the first source and center who has divested so much of himself in energy and mind and matter and spirit, that he has created this dynamic cosmic tension. Tension not in a bad way, but a tension that necessitates growth. The growth is a result of this cosmic dynamic interaction or tension between mind, matter, and spirit. These three elements of the universe, which come from the first source and center, has put in motion perpetual growth, and we are part of that process. Now, if that doesn't sound important to you, then be on your way, and thank you for stopping by. But thinking about how knowing this adds to your understanding of human nature, of human evolution, of governmental evolution, you start to realize that what we're going through today is transient, that it's not forever. It's temporal. And we are part of a living process where we're working towards a common goal, which is the age of light and life, or the age of enlightenment, the age where human beings find and reach their ultimate potential, but they do so in a mindful, spiritual way. And that also that we can expect in the decades and the centuries ahead that we're going to get more visitations. Eventually, our world, if the Urantia book is correct, will be unquarantined and will be in communication with greater frequency. I think part of what's driving this whole UFO thing, everybody's all excited about it, and is this notion that there's life out there. If the Urantia book is true, and we run into an advanced form of life, it may very well be that that form of life will validate the Urantia book. If somehow we're able to somehow communicate with other life forms, if the Urantia book is true, then a more advanced race would know that they are part of a system that the Urantia book calls Jerusalem. The commonality of advanced life is that they become more cognizant of first the system level, then the constellation level, and then the universe, local universe level. We become more aware that there is more out there. And right now, we've been given a book that basically reboots the entire system. And in that, and let me unpack that a little bit. If the Urantia book were a software update, we would be going from, Windows 3.1 to Windows 10 in one fell swoop. The Urantia book claims that one of its missions is to bring humanity up to speed, because we are two full dispensations behind. If you go by the Urantia book, the dispensations have been laid out. There was the planetary print stage when mankind first developed free will, became a bona fide spiritual ascender, and then the first revelatory group came and tried to teach us civilization, just the basic rudiments of civilization, how to farm, how to have a home, how to develop a home life. And they did this by example. And this was so far back in human history that we don't even have anything in writing about it. There are morsels of it in the Bible, where it talks about the giants in those days, those men who took the daughters of man, the sons of God who took the daughters of men as wives. That is in reference to that age. And certainly there are other older Gilgamesh go back to this intervening period between 500,000 years ago and the time that Adam and Eve arrived, which was the second epical period, 40,000 years ago. And then the third epical period is the arrival of Machaventa Melchizedek, who taught Abraham monotheism, 2000 BC. That was the third epic, the fourth being the arrival and the bestowal of the Creator Son, Jesus of Nazareth, 2,000 years since. And here we are now with the Urantia book, which claims to be the fifth epical revelation. And so you've come to my home, you've come to my podcast, and I'm here to share with you this exciting news that the hunt of the ages has been realized, because now we have this book that you and I and anybody can study and read and get so much information. And again, even if you just started with paper 133, which I'm going to dedicate the next podcast to because it's just so brilliant, you would understand and appreciate the greatness of the Urantia book and why it is so significant and why there are 100,000 people who are reading this book every year, and it's growing. It's still in its infancy. And when you compare the Urantia book and the number of people who read it or believe in it compared to other religions, there's no question that the Urantia book is, could be easily be called a minor cult because so few people know about it, but it's exponentially growing. It is clearly exponentially growing. You will start to see and hear about it, I believe, in the next decade. It'll slip out. Somebody, some famous actor, or you know, maybe even an economist or a scientist. Scientists aren't going to tell you that they read the Urantia book, but you know that there are scientists reading the Urantia book who then go on to make some of the discoveries. And they don't give the book credit because it would discredit them if they did that. We know that there have been, what do they call those, where they go to a place and they, an architectural dig somewhere, or they'll, there was a gentleman a few years ago who went to the Mediterranean to look for Eden, the Garden of Eden, but it was under the pretense that he was looking for Atlantis. And some of you listening may know who I'm referring to. Expeditions. There have been expeditions, you know, to uncover some of the claims in the Urantia book, but not giving credit to the Urantia book as the reason for that expedition. But there will be some of those slip-ups. There'll be people who will mention it. Yeah, well, I picked this up from the Urantia book, which is an interesting tome. Or I'm referencing the Urantia book. It's an interesting perspective of the life of Jesus. So it will start to, you know, appear. You know, when that will start happening, who knows? Doesn't matter. But the point is that I appreciate that you came by during this past week or this past year, it took time to hear my thoughts, because frankly, I'm excited about it. Of course, I want everybody to be welcomed to the next great adventure. But it's something I'm, the idea of trying to save people with the truth is something that I gave up on a long time ago, because people misunderstand you. You know, my experience with sharing this book or even sharing thoughts about God is that when people start to feel they're proselytized to, or they feel like you're trying to convince them of something, that they take it that, why are you trying to do this? What is it that you care so much that you feel I need to know this? You know, what are you getting out of it? Are you, is it some, you know, we used to make fun of the Seventh-day Adventists or the Mormons who would come to your door because they were told, or at least we were told, that they were doing it because the more they save people, the better it is for them in heaven. So, but that's not the intent of me wanting to share the Urantia book with you. My intent is because I think this makes living this life easier, or at least less complicated. You understand more so how we got here, you know, why humanity is in the shape that is in, some of the moral questions that we're asking. Why are we asking them now? You know, where are we as a society? And so the Urantia book just sort of gives you a contextual perspective of humanity in the present state, because now you know so much more about the past. See, you can go back and read about the beginnings of time and how different cultures and tribes and races have evolved down through time. It's having that information is tantamount to knowing your history. I mean, why do we take the time to learn about our government's history, or early American history, or early European history? Because it helps you understand where you're going. You know, the Urantia book says many times that wisdom is the ability to integrate the past with the present, and it gives you a clear road path, hopefully, to what you want to accomplish in the future. So if our goal in life is first and foremost to, in this life, develop a faith in a living creator, and that becomes the impetus of our conduct. And then we as individuals are also participating in this great evolutionary struggle to find peace and harmony and inclusion and tolerance and all of these other things that are important so that human beings can get along and be efficient. And if in doing this we make the quality of life better for everyone, less pestilence, less starvation, better use of resources, better allocation of resources, education for everyone so that human beings can grow up and have a shot at having a decent life. If that is the goal as a collective society, then the Urantia book reinforces that by giving us comparative examples of how to get there. It talks specifically, what makes up a good government? What is the definition of a good government? And it goes through 12 and 14 steps. This is what you have to do. You can't overtax your people. You can't. It goes through a litany of what kind of leadership to look for. The Urantia book is a repository of so much information that it would be selfish of me not to want to share it with you. And that's where we'll leave it. So next time we are going to take a trip into paper 133. It's when Jesus was coming back from India with his two Indian travelers. He just did a tour. And there are several key statements, I think five or six of them, that are made by Jesus in his discussions with Ganeed that are extremely valuable lessons in life. So we're going to dedicate, I think maybe for the first time, an actual paper of the fourth part of the book, and that will be the subject matter of our next podcast. So I hope you join me for that. We try to do one or two new podcasts a week, trying a new format this time, using hopefully better technology that makes my voice sound better. And, of course, we always love to see you drop by. Our website is urantiaradio.net, urantiaradio.net. It's a great resource for news and information and also a one-stop area where you can find out what's going on in the greater Urantia community. And we relink to various websites by the foundation, the fellowship, the association, and all the other wonderful contributors to the Urantia book and the Urantia community. So until next time, thank you again for joining me. I'm Jim Watkins, and this is the Urantia Radio Podcast.